Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
The Darkness Inside, Volume 1, Story 1. This happened in July, a few years ago. I was helping a friend that comes up with his wife and camps on private property for the entire summer. He's retired, and his old work buddies come up every fall for hunting season, so he wants to cut out a few old trails of the deadfall to ease the ingress and egress to good hunting spots. The one particular trail is off an inclined forest road winding up the mountain in National Forest. The trail is on the downhill side of the road and meanders on level grade to a point where it meets a tributary of a small river as it descends down a narrow canyon. The area is heavily timbered with a mix of spruce, red, and white fir. The trail is actually part of an old water flume system early miners had dug. So, we four-wheeled to the trailhead, unpacked our saws, gas, and bar oil. We proceeded to brush out the trail, leapfrogging as we went. We hit the terminus, which was only about a mile where the river met the trail on grade. All done, we headed back at a leisurely pace, stopped occasionally to listen, and looked for signs. There were no campers in the general area, and there were only 5 full-time residents in town, including me. My buddy and I were the only ones up the hill that day. As we were nearing the trailhead at about 100 yards, a chainsaw fires up, and the sound of it working on a tree is plainly heard up the embankment. The forest road is only about 50 yards up the hill at that point on the trail. Both looked at each other as the saw stops, and we hear a tree falling through the tops as it wedges over. "Take cover," says I, and we await the thud of the downed tree and the accompanying widowmakers. Nothing. It's as if the tree stopped in mid-fall. No top of any tree swaying like it hung up the fowler. No thud, nothing. While we were standing there, we would have been able to hear a starting vehicle on the road above. Again, nothing. I dropped my gear and sprinted the rest of the way to the forest road. Looked up the road and down, nothing. No vehicle tracks, no sawdust, no fresh cut in sight. Hopped on the four-wheeler and raced up the hill for 2 miles. Never bumped into a soul. Buddy went down the hill for the same distance with the same result. Walked up and down the road again in the area looking for signs of a freshly felled tree. Even grid-walked the slope above the forest 100 feet into the timber. Not a thing. We met back up at the trailhead, packed our gear and headed back to town and to mull things over at his camp over a beer. The best we could come up with was to name the old trail the Phantom Logger Trail. Next story. I grew up in a 100-year-old house. When I was a boy of about 6, my parents got a puppy for my sister and myself. The first few nights, we kept it in a big open cardboard box with a hot water bottle and a ticking clock to simulate his litter mates. Things went well for a couple of nights, but one night I woke to the sound of the puppy crying. I got out of bed to comfort the puppy, and when I left my room, there was just enough light to see without turning any lights on. I rounded the corner into the living room, and adjacent to that room was a dining room where we had the puppy in. I looked over at the box to see a young boy about my age bend over looking into the box. What scared me was he was translucent. I did a 180 and ran back to my room and covered my head up in the bed sheets, and in a while I fell asleep and woke up in the morning. I never told anybody what I had seen, but there was always an unsaid understanding among our family that we were not alone while living there. While I did not see the little boy anymore, having lived there 19 years, there were many odd little things that happened that we learned to take for granted. I was 18 and my folks and sister were gone somewhere, and I was outside washing my motorcycle when I noticed an old man coming up to the house. He introduced himself and said that he was born and raised there. Somewhere in our conversation, he asked if he could go inside and look around. Him being 90, my being 18 and invincible, I said yes. As we went through the house, he told me many things about the history of living there. It was very interesting. We got to the end of the house where my room was, and I told him that it was my room. He didn't go in, but stared at the doorway for a little bit. My brother died in this room when he was 6 of smallpox, he said. He turned, thanked me, and left through the front door, and I never saw him again. It didn't bother me at the time, but I thought of the rough times in those days and hoped his brother found some type of peace. As I turned 60 this year and retired, my wife was thinking what to get me for a retirement gift. I have led a full life and have done many things outdoor related, so she had booked me and a buddy on a Bigfoot expedition. In August, my best friend and myself flew from Alaska to Washington State. We met up with some nice people and went to the woods. Bill, my buddy, and myself set up a camp, and after some orientation, were pretty much left alone. We were told we were in a great area with numerous sightings, so we were looking forward to the evening. Our plan of attack was no howling or tree knocking like we had seen on TV, but to just sit in the environment with no lights on and try to make them curious and come to us. Honestly, neither one of us expected anything. It was just fun to see new country and try new things. The third day we found a place to try in some seriously forested country about 5 miles from our camp. We left camp about midnight and walked into a heavily canopied forest of dug fir and cedar. We sat across from each other about 6 feet between us. We were playing old-time campfire songs, no blues or anything fast. About 1 in the morning, I heard a very light twig snap right behind me. Both Bill and I had heard it, but I didn't turn around, and we kept up as everything was normal. About 5 minutes later, there was 4 or 5 very light taps on a tree directly behind me. Believe me, I turned around to look. It was so dark you couldn't see even shapes of anything. I really believe both the twig and the tapping was a ruse to make us look that way while it crept around us. I have lived 40 years in Alaska, hunted all my life, killed a bunch of bears, but this thing was so stealthy it was absolutely silent and only made noise when it wanted to misdirect us. Here comes the weird part. About then, behind Bill, a red glowing ball about 1.5 inches in diameter is coming towards us, coming close to the ground. I watched in amazement about 5 seconds before telling Bill to turn around. It was coming close to us, and it was bobbing up and down like a gate. It projected light about 10 inches in front of it, and when it stopped, you could see the ferns, moss, and sticks. When it did stop, it made a slight up and down movement, and it was exactly reminding me of a bear's face movement when it's trying to catch scent. All this while, I'm playing the harmonica like nothing's happening, and Bill's talking to it, trying to get it to come closer. At this point, I started to lose my nerve because it was too freaking close already. We watched it for about 1.5 minutes when the light slowly dimmed out. But before it did, the light reflected a big forefinger as it was pushing itself from the ground. We sat there until 3:30 and went back to camp. We went home with more questions than what we got there, but it was a very, very intense and cool experience. Next story. My husband and I own property near the Arkansas-Missouri border. I was raised in that area. In 2004, I was staying by myself in a primitive camp on the back of our property, while my son, his wife, and their new baby stayed in our main house. The way the property is laid out, the main house is on the county dirt road, and then it's our private drive about 1 mile back to where the primitive cabin is, and you have to come through a locked gate at the main house to get to the cabins. This is the only road into our cabin slash deer camp. To get there from the next closest road, you would have to leave the road, wade across a creek, go through overgrown forest, and rappel up a cliff. All this through very rough, tough Ozark briars and woods loaded with ticks and chiggers, not to mention the snakes, wild hogs, and everything else. I was riding our four-wheeler to the main house and helping my daughter-in-law with the baby, then came back to the cabin at night to give the new family a little privacy. There's nothing between the main house and cabin but very rough hollers and hills with woods and wildlife. I made sure I got back to the cabin before sundown because one dark passage of woods is perfect for cougars waiting to pounce. It's wild back there, and even though wolves aren't supposed to be in the Ozarks, I've heard them twice at the cabin. And yes, I know the difference between wolves and coyotes. So I rode back to the cabin the first evening. Since it's warm, I built a fire in the yard to cook on to avoid heating the cabin. My two dogs were with me and seemed nervous. As I was cooking dinner, I noticed something on the cabin's roof. On closer inspection, it was my high school-aged son's jacket. He and my husband had left that day to visit family in Arkansas. I couldn't imagine why his jacket would be on the roof, but knowing, I couldn't let my mind wander to scary theories. I told myself he must have been screwing around and tossed it up there for some dumb reason. Any of you with teenagers can see my logic in this as they do some really dumb stuff. I was armed with a 9mm pistol and had my dogs, a Jack Russell and a Dalmatian, for company. In 2004, there was no cell reception that far back. I finished dinner, watched the stars come out, and with the dogs increasingly nervous, I locked us in the cabin for the night. It was a long time before sunup. The dogs paced and whined all night. I turned the radio and prayed for the best. A cold front went through that night, and the next morning, my son and husband came driving up. My son ran up to the cabin saying, "Where's my jacket? I'm freezing." When I told him it was on the cabin roof, he was beyond shock and had no idea how it got there. He and my husband recalled last seeing it hanging on the porch rail. Whatever or whoever put it up there had to do so during the afternoon when I was at the main cabin with my grandbaby. I wondered if it was watching me as I cooked dinner. About a month later, the cabin outhouse, a very heavy-built one, was pushed over. My stepbrother and nephew found it and knew of a bear in the area and thought maybe the bear pushed it over. I'm pretty sure no bear threw that jacket up on the roof. If any of you have any idea what that might be, other than a person, I'd like to hear about it, because truthfully, I don't think so. The land around ours is all private and in very rough, wild condition. It'd be a hell of a bother to go back there, even if you came by the main road across our land. One of our long-term neighbors didn't even know there were cabins back there. So again, the question begs to be asked. Who threw that jacket up on the roof? Next story. A couple of years ago, I spent the summer fighting wildfires in southern Oregon. My crew was in a particularly large fire, and an unfortunate series of events landed us a night shift. On one of those nights, we were posted up near the top of a ridge as the fire was burning slowly up towards us from a valley below. The fire was a good half mile away, so there wasn't much for us to do besides wait. We broke off into groups of two and spread out over a large stretch of road and hunkered down for the night. My partner got bored of sitting around, so he decided to hike over and check in on the groups on either side of us. The next thing I remembered is waking up in a start. It was dead quiet, and the air was incredibly still. But thick smoke had settled in around us and was messing with the bright moonlight. It's hard to describe. The light was bouncing around the smoke, so it appeared relatively bright. But it was smoke, so you still can't see more than 10 or 20 feet in front of you. Anyway, I woke up in this dead, silent, still, eerie night. I immediately knew something was wrong, but I couldn't quite place it. I tried, but I couldn't get myself to relax. I was looking around trying to peer through the smoke at anything that could have woken me up. At about 30 seconds after waking up, I heard a stick snapping nearby. Instantly, my sphincter clenched. I sat straight up, switched on my headlamp to try and look around. Of course, the headlamp didn't do much to illuminate anything besides smoke. After a couple of minutes frantically looking around and not seeing or hearing anything, I started to relax a bit and switched off my headlamp and leaned back. At this point, I was starting to think that the setting was too perfect for my crew not to be missing with me. Besides, animals don't like smoke, so they usually aren't around fires. I was about to start laughing at myself for being so jumpy over nothing and yell that they weren't going to scare me this time. Then I heard another crack, a lot closer this time, about 20 feet away. I instantly knew this wasn't anyone in my crew. It was too silent that night for anyone to be able to sneak up on me like that, especially as freaked out as I was a couple of minutes ago, trying to find the source of the initial stick breaking. I jumped right up, tool in hand, and looked in the direction of the snap. Then I saw it, about 20 feet away, a silhouette, easily distinguishable from the trees. There was no branches on this silhouette, not to mention it wasn't there in my previous scans. What I did see through was a definite head sitting on top of a neck, on top of broad shoulders, standing about 6 feet 5 inches tall. But it also had eyes, big eyes, that were glinting a bit from the moonlight. Needless to say, I turned and hightailed it back to the road, and then down the road until I found some other people from my crew. I talked to the people who were around me, and none of them saw or heard anything the rest of the night, or any other night we were on top of that ridge. But I know what I saw, and it wasn't human, and it scared the absolute crap out of me. Next story. This happened a couple of years ago. I live in rural southeast Georgia, at the end of a dead-end road. 300 yards behind our house is a creek that flows into a 40-plus acre lake over a spillway and goes through the southern part of the county. Across the dirt road from me is approximately 15-acre track with a vehicle turnaround dividing the track. The turnaround travels back 200 to 300 feet to three tall pine trees. The right side of the woods is oak and brush, and the left side is all 40 to 80 foot tall pines. There are several trails crisscrossing the track of land. I walk through this part every day as part of my dog walk. It was a beautiful day about 10 a.m., wind blowing because of a hurricane off the coast of Florida. I was finishing my walk and had come back to the three pine trees. My young dogs love to dig, so I let them dig for a while. I had been there about 5 minutes when I heard my husband walk up behind me on my right side, then move over to my left side. I kept watching the dogs dig. About that time, my male dog, Gator, looked up and his face was covered with dirt with only his beautiful golden eyes showing. Laughing, I looked to see if my husband could see Gator's face. Standing 2 to 3 feet in front of me to the left was an Indian brave. I was in shock and just stood there for a few moments. I looked to my left to see if my husband could see him and no hubby. I looked back and yes, the Indian was still there. I know he could see me by the look on his face. We locked eyes and just looked at each other. Again, I looked for my husband. My mind could not accept what I was looking at. It was just me, the dogs, and the Indian. He was solid. I could see the sweat on his chest and the muscles in his chest, arms, and legs. I don't remember looking at his feet to see if he was barefooted or what. He was about 5 feet 10 inches tall, long black hair, sunburned by the sun, and about 30 years of age. He was wearing a loincloth halfway to his knees, a wide leather band on his right wrist, also several smaller leather strings with blue beads tied around his wrist. In his right hand, he was holding a long spear, a tad taller than he was. I looked again for my missing husband, and when I looked back at the Indian, he disappeared in front of my eyes. I got my dogs and went back to the house. I asked my husband if he left the house, and he said no. I told him what happened, and I don't think he really believed me. A few days later, our driveway alert started going off, and nothing was there. My husband teased me, saying, "There goes your Indian to the creek to fish." I wasn't scared, just surprised. I've had several things happen in the pine woods at night since this happened, and when we walk the dogs at night, my husband knows I will not go deep into the woods. I stay close to the front of the woods. Yes, many strange things have happened to me like this, but never this close. I've always wondered what would have happened if I'd reached out and touched him. So there are times I feel a presence around me, and I just say hello and go my merry way. Next story. In the summer of 2005, I just graduated from high school. Having wrecked my first car, stupid teen, right? I was having to get around to visit friends via four-wheeler. Well, it was about 30-45 minute ride on West Virginia's ridgetops and ridges to get to a little place called Big Run, West Virginia. Just a few houses along a valley road and a post office, which was just a collection of mailboxes. Well, I spent the majority of the day hanging out and doing country kid stuff, and it was well past midnight when I decided it was time to head home. I was about halfway through my trip on an overcast night. I was on a heavily vegetated part of the trail with brush, briars, bushes coming right up to the narrow gravel path I was riding on. Something in my mind told me to stop and check to make sure I had all the things I needed, like cell phone and house keys. I sat on the ATV for about 20 or 30 seconds, checking my pockets, and when I was satisfied, I started to accelerate slowly forward and to get back on the road. I heard from the hillside to my right a loud crack, like a thick branch being broken. This didn't alarm me too much, as there was a lot of stuff out there at night. I came to a part about 20 yards in front of me where the path got pretty narrow and I had to slow down to avoid being hit by briars and cut up. Well, when I got about halfway through this 5 to 10 yard section, I heard rustling in the bush to my right, the same side I'd heard the crack from moments earlier. It was seconds after hearing this that a large rock, at least the size of a basketball, came straight out from the top of the bush on the right side. It didn't have an arc. It did not bounce or anything like that. It came out in a horizontal line, straight, like it was a chest pass in basketball. There is no way that it rolled down the hillside and bounced that high. Or even if it had, would have been able to have the flight path that it did. It came out straight from the bush, like it was thrown. I started to hit my brakes when the bush started rustling again, and I was expecting a deer or some other animal to bolt across the road. so the rock barely missed my head. I felt the wind from it as it passed. It was that close. Just as it missed and hit the ground with a thud, I heard a very low growl. A growl so low and close that it made the bones in my chest vibrate, like a bass guitar amp vibration, deep and low and angry. After I heard that, I floored it. I had made it about a quarter to a half mile down the path when the damn four-wheeler started to sputter. I had forgotten to switch to reserve tank after a day of riding around, and I had run out of gas in the main. The four-wheeler sputtered to a stop, and all I had was red brake lights behind me and my headlights dead ahead. I reached up and flipped the knob to reserve and started trying to start it, but didn't put the choke on, so it was fighting to pull gas into the engine. I sat there trying to start it for a few seconds, and I heard heavy thudding and large crashing coming from the left side of the road. This side goes downhill to the bottom of the hill, and it sounded like a bull or a bulldozer was crashing its way through the woods and headed in my direction. It was at this time that anxiety and fear hit me like a sack of bricks, and I puked off the side of the ATV onto the road. I cranked that choke all the way up, and thank God the thing started, because I floored it all the way home and didn't look back once. I kept that speedometer needle maxed for as long as I could. The rock that was thrown at me sat on the side of that path for years, until the roads got widened to make room for the big trucks being used in the fracking boom nowadays. That's how I know I wasn't crazy, and it was the only piece of evidence I had, no matter how flimsy. Most people just said it rolled there, but I know better. I saw how it got there. Whether you believe in Bigfoot or not doesn't matter. If you find yourself at the wrong place at the wrong time, you will have a baptism by fire, just like I did. Next story. I was on break for college. It was in the fall, which was basically an extended weekend, and I had plans to camp on Sunday, Monday night, and then return to school on Tuesday. My cousin was also on break and was accompanying me on the trip. We were from different schools, so we figured this would be a good way to catch up, and we both grew up camping and hiking all our lives, so what's better way to relax for a few days? Sunday got rained out, so we decided that we would do a hike in and camp hike out and make it about a 24-hour process. It was a typical October autumn day in West Virginia. We had about a 5-mile hike plan to get around the area that we wanted to stay at that night. We were in no rush, and this was just a leisurely evening to catch up, so we didn't take the 5 miles too quickly. We arrived at the place we would call home that night in the early evening and decided that it was perfect. It was almost like a miniature field that was surrounded by dense forest. We were minimalist campers and only had a small pack and our bags that we would just lay by the fire at night. We had about 2 hours to set up a small fire pit and get it going before nightfall. This was an easy process that we'd done hundreds of times before, and before we realized it, night was upon us. The time passed quickly as we caught up on everything that was going on during our senior years of college. It was around 2 a.m. when we were interrupted mid-conversation by something that let out the worst piercing scream, yell, that I'd ever heard. To this day, it is still the most terrifying thing I have ever heard. It lasted probably 6 to 8 seconds before it stopped. My cousin and I didn't even speak. We just exchanged worried looks, and then it happened again. This time was about half the length and cracked and stopped abruptly. We couldn't see into the woods around us and only had small flashlights. We had a very brief conversation and decided we would make the hike out of the woods at that very moment. I've never hiked so fast in my life. We put the fire out and packed up in a matter of a minute or two. I was never so relieved to make it out of the woods early that morning. The scream is still something that I can't explain. I've spent my whole life in the woods and still don't know what it is. I know all the owls and their sounds in the area. I've had many encounters with bear, foxes, coyote, and bobcats, and distinctly know all of their calls. The scream almost had a human element to it, but it had animal characteristics to it as well. All I know is I can't describe it or find something that sounds similar. I'm not going to speculate on what it was, but I do know that it frightened me to my bones and still does to this day. Maybe one day I'll get the courage to camp there again. Next story. I was 18 at the time, accompanied by 3 others who were the same age. We decided to go out and rough it for a night on a camping trip. The area we went to was accessible only by ATV, and it sat right in the bank of the creek. This giant bend in the creek is referred to as King's Bend by the locals and is known for good fishing in the day and a place to avoid like the plague at night. Here's a little backstory that I discovered after the event happened. There are two train tunnels that run under the hills in this area. They were built way back in the day by cheap labor, and the workers who died during the process were buried in shoddy, unmarked graves close to where we camped. There's also a large field to the east of the campsite. It has a house on it, which I believe is used by the West Virginia State Troopers as a campground. The reason it's used by them is that it was possessed by the state after a shootout occurred there in which several members of a local group of bad men were killed by the police in a raid. Just up the creek away from our site, a large old dead tree hangs out over the water, which a man had hung himself on many years earlier. Also, I wish I had known about all of these before we went camping. A woman and her child had drowned in a canoe accident from what I learned directly in the creek in front of our camping site. So, with all of that out of the way, remember that we had no clue of any of this as we went down there that night. And I'm going to begin my story. My cousin, friends, and I gathered by our camping supplies, fishing poles, food, etc., and headed down while the sun was still up, although close to setting. In the last hour of the day, we started our fire, set up our tent, and started goofing off. Mind you, there was no alcohol, drugs, or any other things that would have impaired our perceptions. This was all witnessed, felt, or heard by everyone involved. It was not long after the sunset and total darkness was upon us that the first sign that something wasn't right began. My cousin and I were sitting on the bank of the creek, roughly 30 feet from our camping site. We had a spotlight shining it down in the water, spotting fish and trying to spear them. We weren't very successful, but that's not the important part. After about 3 minutes of doing this, we noticed that every time we would shut the light off, we would hear a whoosh, whoosh in the water. Very distinctly the sound of someone sloshing through water. When we turned the light back on, you could see waves, ripples in the water. Not slight ripples that could be caused by a fish or something else, but very heavy, rough ripples. Something with weight to it. There were also two sets of ripples, about the distance apart a human would create if they were wading through water. When we turned the spotlight off, it started again. Turned it back on, stopped, but the water was disturbed. The truly scary thing about this is that they were headed across the creek towards us. This alone was not enough to cause concern, but my cousin and I looked at each other thinking, that's weird. But we went on about our business. Sitting back at the campsite with the fire raging in front of us, we started shooting the breeze and enjoying the night. However, it wasn't long before, once again, weird things started. We started hearing voices echoing off the hillside. They were more like whispers, but they were loud, if that makes any sense. At first, this wouldn't be the cause for alarm, as people hunt for raccoons at all times of the night. However, the voices never got louder, never got softer. We did not hear any dogs, which is a necessity to hunt raccoons. They stayed the same volume. They sounded like they were practically on top of us. They were so clear and loud that it sounded like someone was whispering directly into my ear. Only everyone was hearing it that way. So it was like one voice was whispering into our collective ears. We looked around our immediate area. Nothing. There were tall weeds, grass in the area around our campsite, and once or twice it sounded like someone ran through them. Solid thuds on the ground, grass thrashing and moving violently. This is the only event I will write about that I can 100% contribute to the paranormal, as it could have been an animal, but in hindsight, I don't think so. The fear had begun to sink in. At first, the voice was very hushed, indistinct, but clearly audible. After about 2 or 3 minutes, it started to become more apparent. The voice wasn't whispering about us. What are they doing here? They need to leave. You shouldn't be here. If this sounds like something out of a horror novel, I am 1,000% inclined to agree with you. At this point, sheer panic broke out. We decided at that moment to leave, quickly. The ATV was parked just out of firelight, still visible, but faintly. As I stood up, looked at my friends and told them that we needed to go, I started to jog towards the ATV to get it started while my friends got what they absolutely couldn't leave behind that night. I was looking over my shoulder at first, and then I turned to look ahead at the ATV. I was literally frozen in place at what I saw. Standing just beside the ATV under a tree was the outline of a tall man and what looked like a hat. You could see no details. It was just blackness. You could see through it as if it was transparent, but what was beyond looked twisted and distorted, like looking through water or something. There were no red eyes, as I've read in other encounters of such things, but I'm sure there are variants of every type of supernatural thing. He had no feet, just sort of ended at his ankles in wavy lines, almost like what heat waves looked like above a fire, my heart sank into my stomach. An undeniable feeling of fear and revulsion took over. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I was rooted on the spot from the moment I laid eyes on it. This is the moment where I realized, holy shit, ghosts are real. My cousin came up just beside me at that time and saw it too. He was also just frozen on the spot. After about 10 or 15 seconds, I don't really know, it seemed like an eternity to me, it sort of zipped back in the direction of the train tunnels. The best way I can describe it is if you remember The Flash, how he sort of had an outline of himself behind him as he moved really fast. Just like that. It went very quickly back into the darkness and disappeared. We got on that ATV and hauled out of there like full fury, like the hounds of hell were on our tail, because for all we knew, they were. We spent the night indoors, wide awake, scared to death, while we tried to rationalize and make sense of what we had just experienced. It wasn't until afterwards that I learned about all the things I wrote about above and heard from men who are hard men, guys who show no fear to any living thing that I wouldn't want to cross under any circumstance, that even they avoid that area at night. Nobody goes through that section after the sun goes down. We didn't know of this, of course, or we would have heeded their advice. If any of this sounds unbelievable, I don't blame you one bit. If someone told me this story, I'd laugh at them, call them a storyteller, etc. I'm not one to tell stories myself, and I can tell you that what I've written did happen, and it changed my life. It really led me to question life, death, and what happens afterwards. An interesting addition to the story, my uncle, who owns the land, was out hunting with a dog at night. He was standing below a large rock face, and the dog was up on top. It knocked a large rock loose that fell and struck my uncle in the neck. He was paralyzed in the right side of his body. Somehow he got on his ATV, turned it around, and drove himself out of the woods. After I told the story I just spoke about before, he messaged my mother. My uncle is not one to joke around. He is a funny guy, but he does not lie. He abhors liars. He told my mother that he'd never told anyone this, but that the man in the hat that we saw down by the creek that night helped him get his ATV turned around and helped him get on it. That completely blew my mind, and I do not doubt that he is telling the truth. Next story. This happened about maybe like 2009. It was early fall, and three of my friends asked me to come along on an adventure they had planned. They explained they had heard about a haunted bridge, and they wanted to explore it. So we all got in my car and made our way to the area west of a moderately medium-sized town in Fauquier County. I think it's important to note that the area was a frequent pass-through area during the war. We finally found the bridge, which was a work of iron, actually fairly modern by design. Then we saw the old stone pilings for the original bridge running beneath. We parked and worked our way down to the bottom of the ravine that the bridge crossed. It became clear that my friend saw the whole thing as a great time to get drunk and generally considered it like a nature hike. I sat back to pay attention to the area while they carried on. The light slowly faded and darkness fell. They were talking about maybe making a fire when I held up my hand to quiet them. All four of us plainly heard a horse galloping over a dirt road. By the way, the road was paved. Then wood planking right above our heads. My friends freaked and made fools of themselves trying to get back to the car. I followed behind at a leisurely pace until I got back up there myself. They were barricaded in my car, whispering that they thought the ghost had gotten me when I got in the driver's seat. They all screamed bloody murder while I laughed myself nearly senseless. Later I explained residual hauntings to them. However, none of them ever wanted to go back. Next story. As a kid in the mid-70s, I used to spend a fair amount of time in Los Padres National Forest, north of L.A. I was 11 at that time and was on one of my favorite trails leading into a box canyon. I knew this remote area pretty well and had been up that canyon many times, pinking and hunting with my Winchester that never left my side as a kid in the wilderness. Boy, times have changed. I was a good one, maybe 90-minute hour walk up the canyon, and almost to my perch where I could survey a very large area, when around the bend comes an old dude. And he looks at me. He's maybe about 50. He's walking a horse with a deer strapped across the haunches. He says hello, and I say, "Nice deer," and we exchange pleasantries for maybe 30 seconds. He tells me to be careful, that he's seen a mountain lion coming up the canyon a little ways. I thanked him, and off we go in opposite directions. The guy didn't scare me in the slightest, but I knew something wasn't right. He looked like he was coming out of the late 1800s or early 1900s. His clothes, guns, saddle, canteen, you name it. 5 minutes later, I'm at my perch and can see a 200-yard stretch of the only trail out about a mile down the canyon. I'm looking for this guy and never see him in about an hour's time of sitting there. I'm worrying a little and thinking maybe I should head down and see if he was hurt or having some kind of problem. People used to do stuff like that for each other. Now I see two people walking that stretch up the canyon, so I stay put but kept an eye on the stretch for the next half an hour and still nothing. Up on the trail come my two older sisters and I realize that they were the ones I saw coming up the trail. I asked about the guy with the horse and the deer and they said I'm the only other person they came across since they started up the canyon. There were no side trails or canyons and no place to hide between my observation point and that trail below. My sisters looked down and said, "You're full of it. Where's the tracks?" To that point, I hadn't thought to look, and they were right. There were no tracks. Next story. 1987, a friend of mine and I went fishing on the Trinity River near Palestine, Texas. We both just graduated from dental school and were working for the Department of Corrections. He was assigned to the Beto 2 unit in Palestine, and I was at the Ellis 2 unit in Huntsville. We had been at that spot for about half an hour when we were approached by two very rough-looking fellows with shotguns. There are a lot of people who bird hunt along the river, and at the time, we didn't give it much attention or thought. There are people who live off the rivers in tents until they're run off by parks and wildlife. Then they just move to another area. They're known as river rats. One of them said, "What you boys doing?" Obviously, it was self-explanatory since we had fishing rods. We told them we were catfishing. The other one chanted, "There ain't no catfish here." The dialogue sounded familiar, and we both realized at the same time this was the season out of Deliverance. The same one asked where we worked. My friend almost began to say, "Texas Department of Corrections," and I coughed really loud and shook my head. For all we knew, they were ex-cons. I told them we were in construction and our crew was in town to do some repairs on the school. The sun was about to set, so we told them we needed to go, but they blocked our egress. I had a Ruger Mark in my backpack and fortunately had the mag in it. I asked my friend if he had a smoke. Then I said, "Never mind, it's in my backpack." With a little sleight of hand, I quickly stuck the gun in my pants where they could see it. We just told them, "Have a good evening," and walked perpendicular to them along the bank of the river. Pulled the Ruger out from the front of my pants and put it in the back where they could see it. They didn't attempt to follow us. We backtracked around them to the truck and hauled ass back to his house. On the way back, I asked my friend which one of us would have been the piggy. I told him he was the one with the purty mouth. Lesson learned. Never go anywhere like that unless you have at least a 9mm or long rifle on you, unless it's a state park or a place where there are other people.